friends. It is Tuesday, March 4th, 2014. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. Today, I would like you to visit my website. That is spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button, and then on the month of March, so that you may access some of the items that we're going to be talking about. Please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.info, a site that one of our listeners created. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. Now, one of the main things that I would like to draw your attention to on the website, spingola.com, under March, is official reports. Now, the official reports are unbelievable. There are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pages. It will take you probably an external hard drive. Well, you'll probably want to put them on an external hard drive. There are recordings, there are videos. One of the most important things that you should definitely download is when you visit this site, and the site is the site is CSPSandyHookReport.ct.gov, or just click official reports on my website on today's date. But probably the most important reports that you could download would be listed under reports, and it is the 9 books. It's a total of 9 books. And the total PDF files within those 9 books are 740 PDF files. Now, each PDF file might have, well, a couple hundred pages. So this is big-time investigation. This is real research. People should not be getting their research or getting all of the things that they know about Sandy Hook from YouTube videos. That is not research. That's just, who knows who created all of these YouTube videos. Now, there was a report of the state's attorney for the Judicial District of Danbury on the shootings, and this was just a summary of the report. It's not the actual report, but it was created, written by the Office of the State's Attorney, Judicial District of Danbury. It was written by the state's attorney, Stephen J. Sedensky, and it came out on November 25th, 2013. And just the summary is 48 pages. And I kind of, well, perhaps people haven't even looked at the summary. My guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig. That is H-A-L-B-I-G. His website is ChildrensSafetyInstitute.com. Welcome to the program, Mr. Halbig.
Thank you, Deanna, for allowing me to have a conversation with you today.
What do people usually call you? Shall I call you Mr. Halbig?
Oh, no. Please call me Wolf.
Okay. All righty. On January 22nd, 2014, you wrote a letter to the Newtown Board of Education in which you state, and I quote, "I have spent a lifetime as a Florida State Trooper in Miami, Florida, from 1974 through 1977, and then realizing I'm in the wrong profession. When you work as a law enforcement officer in Miami, Florida, it seems as a lifetime, even if it is only 3 years or less. I was putting people in jail instead of trying to prevent them from going to jail, so I became a school administrator for 36 years, unquote. Now, you contacted the Board of Education. You had some things that you wanted to talk to them about, some questions that you had. Was it your objective to acquire information to assist you in your work through your offices of the Children's Safety Institute?
No, I did that. Well, the Children's Safety Institute is just the business I have. I do, I'm a national school safety consultant. I've traveled the country.
Okay.
I'm a national school safety consultant.
I will get to your credentials, but I'm just going to try and establish a foundation so that we can discuss all these things that you wish to discuss. Now, you established the Children's Safety Institute in 2012.
Right.
Is that correct? And according to Hoositz, that's what you did. Now, the CSI, the Children's Safety Institute, has really not too much to do with regular school safety, but it really focuses on the safety of children with special needs, such as autistic children, and how to handle potentially violent special needs children. Is that correct?
Well, not to handle violent children with autism. It's training teachers how to handle children with autism when they have sensory overload.
Super. All right. Now, you list your address on your website. Let me just go to your website. It's a very nice website. Did you design that?
No, we had a company design it.
Okay. Now, on your website, you list how to contact you, and you are located at 5703 Red Bug Lake Road, Suite 103. Is that correct?
That's the chief executive officer's address.
Uh-huh.
My home address is 255.
Well, I don't think it's a really good idea to give out your home address.
I don't mind. I want people to know.
I think it's not such a great idea.
Well, now, you should allow me if that's what my choice is.
Well,
yeah,
I
but you should allow me to give it out. You're telling me what I can't say.
Wolf. I think it's very unwise, given that you allege that police officers have come to your home to talk with you.
I allege.
Well, okay. Wolf. Let's talk about the things that we're going to be talking about, and let me just ask you some questions to establish a foundation. Now, isn't it true that Suite 103 is not really an office, but is actually just a mailbox at the UPS store, mailboxes, etc.?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you don't really have an office, is that correct?
Don't need an office because
I'm just asking.
What's the point? Just get to the point of what this
Wolf,
are you
I'm
trying
just
to discredit
asking. Wolf, no, I'm not trying to discredit you. I'm asking you questions. You list your address as Suite 103.
Children's Safety Institute.
Wolf, I am trying to get some information from you. I'm not trying to discredit you. I think people discredit themselves.
If we're going to have a conversation.
Wolf, I'm going to. This is my program. This is my program. I will direct it as I see fit. Okay. Now, please allow me to ask you some questions. You said that you have on your website, you give your address, you list a suite, but in fact, it is not a suite at all. It is a post office box. Okay. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig. His website is childrenssafetyinstitute.com. And I just want to ask some questions about some things that you've said in earlier interviews. I understand that you have established the Sandy Hook Justice Trust. And on March 2nd, you posted on your Facebook page, and I quote, this Well, I'm going to have to add some words. This is why everyone needs to invest in the Sandy Hook Justice Fund, because the Sandy Hook shooting illusion needs to be exposed and broken, and with you and our attorney, it can happen. Unquote. Do you have an attorney?
We're looking for one. We're interviewing about three good attorneys here in Orlando, Florida, and one in Connecticut.
Okay, great. Now, in July of 2012, weren't you also collecting money for some other campaign? You were trying to raise $100,000 for children that are harassed, threatened, intimidated, assaulted, racially, and now gender discriminated against?
Absolutely, we're doing that.
Okay. Now, I understand that you lost family members in the Holocaust and that your father was in a Nazi camp. Where were you born?
I was born in Heidelberg, Germany, and my father was in Warsaw, a prison of war camp for the Nazis.
Okay. You became a naturalized American citizen at the age of 12.
No. I came to this country at age 12.
Oh, okay.
Couldn't speak a word of English.
Oh, okay. Well, you've done very well. I don't hear any German accent at all. Now, on September 25th, 2012, Mary Bruce wrote an article titled "Obama Outlines Efforts to Prevent Modern Slavery," and under the comments to this article, you wrote the following.
Okay.
Obama hates the Jews and does not even acknowledge that Jerusalem is the capital. His Democratic platform removed God from our foundation as Americans. Today, I am as angry as anyone can get. What is it going to take for the uneducated Americans to get educated and start thinking about how they have responsibilities and not just rights that they throw in our faces every day? My father, for 4 years, I learned, was in a Nazi prison in Posen, Poland. Thank God that the Americans found him. The letters I have now found in Germany makes me sick to my stomach as to what Hitler did to the Jewish race. To this day, I cannot believe that someone did not kill him, which would have saved 6 million of our people there, not just a Jewish race. They are people just like you and me. The uneducated just keep watching the idiot box all day long because it appears our America is not the America that our baby boomers protected. Now, was your father Jewish?
My father was Polish.
Okay. And so you're Polish?
I am Polish. Yes, I am Catholic Polish. You know, Deanna, I got to say this. You wouldn't believe the emails that I'm getting in Facebook. They're actually calling me a Jew because I'm asking for donations. And they say, well, that's how a Jew works. You know, they just try to get some money. I'm not Jewish.
Do you believe that Obama does not do enough for Israel?
Absolutely. Israel is the best ally this country could have. I'm going to tell you what, they should have shot and killed Adolf Hitler before he started killing.
So you believe in the Holocaust?
Absolutely.
And you believe that
he destroyed and killed millions of innocent Jews.
Okay. Let me just ask you, so you think that America should be doing more for Israel?
Absolutely.
Okay. All righty. Let's establish some of the things that you believe about Sandy Hook. You believe that no children were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School?
I'm not going to make that statement as I talk with Dave Garrity. If they can answer those 16 questions, if they'll answer it, then children died. If they cannot answer those 16 simple questions, I do not believe any children or school staff member died on December 14th, 2000.
Okay. Did you call the Daniel Honan funeral home and talk to the gentleman there, Daniel Honan, H-O-N-A-N?
I can't remember now.
Because when I called him, and I believe that you called him also, he said that he took care of 11 of the bodies.
That's right. He took care of 11 of the bodies, and he was supposed to file the death certificates with the state.
Okay. All righty. On Sunday, February 23rd, 2014, there was an article. It was entitled February 24th, 2014, Credentialed Expert, Sandy Hook school shooting was a scripted event in planning for maybe 2 years. If the events of 9/11 could be orchestrated, then so too could the events of Sandy Hook, Connecticut in December 2012. The mystery is almost over as one investigator gets close to the truth. What really happened at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in December of 2012? The article says, and I quote, Hal Bigg, who runs the website ChildrenSafetyInstitute.com, is an expert witness in the field of school safety and security and has also testified before the Congressional Commission on School Safety and Security. Hal Bigg is the executive director of the National Institute of School and Workplace Safety, unquote. Is that true?
I was the executive director of NISWS. That's true. I am a recognized state and federal expert witness. I've been approved by the courts. Okay.
Okay. All righty. Great.
Okay.
You were the president of the National Institute for School and Workplace Safety. That was established on Monday, September 17, 2001, and then it kind of went defunct. Your address for that business was 120 International Parkway, Suite 220. Now, wasn't Suite 220 really just another mailbox at the UPS store?
No, it was not. It was, matter of fact, one of the nicest offices in Heathrow overlooking a golf course, and you would have loved sitting in my chair watching people tee off every day.
Okay. Well, I contacted the people at experts.com, and they replied that you were not currently an active member as an expert witness.
Why do I pay $599 to
have my name? You would have to get a hold of them. Let me give you their phone number so that you can call them and ask.
I don't want to be listed. You know what? When you become an expert, you don't sell your name.
I'm just trying to verify your credentials, Mr.
Well, I agree with you, but I'm not advertising that I'm an expert witness. I get called.
Well, yes, you are. You just said that you're an expert witness. So
to verify that you
are actually an expert witness, I did call this organization, and they say that you are not currently an active member. So you indicated, Mr. Halbig, that Newtown Public Schools won't return any calls. And you say that that this non-cooperation to contribute information for other school safety is unheard of. Now, if you're not currently an expert witness, and inasmuch as your current business seems to deal with individual children, the Newtown Board of Education is not obligated or required to satisfy your request, right?
Absolutely not. It's public record.
Okay.
They're receiving federal tax dollars.
We are going to a quick break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor, and then you can pick it up. We'll pick it up and talk about tax dollars. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig, H-A-L-B-I-G. His website is ChildrensSafetyInstitute.com. And you mentioned the word tax dollars. Didn't you start a school security company in the early 2000s when you were able to secure a no-bid contract with a school district in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, for $395,000 because you were friends with a board member?
Are you ready, Deanna? I do not know any board members. I do not know the superintendent. And I had to rebid not once but twice. And even the Washington Post wrote an article about it. So, no, it was a bid. It had to be a formal bid. There were seven people at the table. We all had to submit our bids.
Okay. So that was taxpayer money, and that enabled you to do security assessments for 122 schools. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then they let the contract run its course and then terminated you when the contract expired, correct?
I was never terminated. That's a bad word to use. The contract ran out.
Okay, so then
it expired. We weren't fired.
They let the contract run its course, and that was it. So you were no longer you no longer did security assessments for 122 schools, correct?
Correct, but they're using our emergency management plan today that we designed for them. They're using our hotline today. I mean, we left some really good things for them, for school safety.
Great. Wonderful. Now, that money that funded that came from a federal grant by the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security by way of the Safe Schools Initiative. Is that correct?
Yep, just like 50 other states.
Okay. Now, were you living in Maryland at the time or no?
No, I lived in Florida.
Okay. All righty. Now, you were a Florida State Trooper for 3 years?
Probably a little less than 3 years, but you know, like when you work in Miami, it's like working 3 years for each 1 year you work. You stay busy. Miami is tough.
Sure.
But I was a Florida State Trooper. I was certified. I went through the academy, class president, worked the presidential detail, top secret clearance. So, yep.
Now, after all that, why did you leave?
That's a great question, Deanna. Let me tell you what. I did not like putting people in jail. After a while, that's not who I wanted to be. So I decided to go into education. I'm trying to prevent people from going to jail.
Okay. Well, that's a good. That's very good.
Thank you.
That is a very good objective. Don't you think that procedures have changed over the last 40 years since you were in law enforcement?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. They have changed dramatically because then we had no trauma helicopters. We didn't have paramedics or EMTs. We didn't have trauma centers. We didn't have the jaws of life. And guess what? We had to do it. And you're right.
Sure.
Thank God things have changed.
Right. Now, you were the director of security for Seminole Schools, Seminole County in Florida, in 1996. And before that?
Nope, 1994 through 1999, I was the director of safety for Seminole County Schools. Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. All righty. And before that, you were the head girls soccer coach at Lake Brantley?
Volleyball
coach?
1986.
Okay.
See, what happens when you become a director of school safety? Before that, I was a principal of an alternative school. I was an assistant principal at three of the biggest high schools. I mean, you know, I was a dean of students, teacher. It just speeds up. And while you're teaching and dean, you can also coach. So I did both at the same time.
Oh, okay. All righty. That happens with a lot of teachers, I think. You were also a U.S. Customs agent?
Yep, I worked as a customs inspector at the OIA, Sanford International, Port Canaveral, and I got involved with that because it's just nice to keep your hands in law enforcement. So,
when did you do that?
I can't remember the dates. I think it was, 2000. I did it for like a year and a half, 2 years.
Okay. Now, are you... You're retired, or you still have your hand in your business here?
I started the Children's Safety Institute in 2012, so I'm doing that, and I still travel the country. I did a workshop for 200 school board members just recently in Tampa on making schools safer. So I work for school boards and superintendents.
All right, but according to experts.com, you're not active,
and I don't want to be listed there.
Oh, okay. All righty. Now, you mentioned that you were involved in Columbine, and you were called as an expert witness at Columbine?
I wasn't called. I worked as an expert in researching the response of how law enforcement, SWAT team, and the paramedics responded to Columbine.
And who hired you to do this?
Justice.
The Department of Justice?
Right.
And when did they hire you?
Well, you get a phone call from the United States Department of Education.
When did they hire you?
I would say, April 20th, April 21st.
They called you the day after?
No, what happens, Deanna, is like there are a lot of us. There's an expert out of California, Ron Stevens. We get contacted by these drug and free schools company, department mm-hmm. up in Washington, D.C. They asked us to come out and take a look at what happened and see how we can make it safer next time.
Okay. Now, after, when did you start your investigation on Sandy Hook?
I did it a week after the shooting unfolded. You know, it happened on December 14th, and to be honest with you, I mean, you know what I do for a living. I was actually in shock. I mean, I couldn't believe that somebody could actually do that to our children and teachers. I mean, they're the most vulnerable people. So it took me a week to figure this thing out.
It took you how long?
About a week to just calm down and watch all the video footages and
But they weren't released. None of those video footages were released until November of 2013.
None of the helicopters.
Which helicopter?
WABC.
Okay. And where did you see that? Was that a YouTube video that?
That was actually on CNN Live with.
The 42-minute one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember, I showed the video of all the people storming into a school, which they made it look like it was Sandy Hook when it was actually another school. They showed it live on CNN.
To tell you the truth, I don't watch CNN. I don't watch TV much.
Can I tell you what? But as an expert witness, I can only look at data. It's not ever what I think or what I believe. It's what does it show.
Okay. So since the official reports came out on November 25th of 2013, have you looked at all of those hundreds and thousands of pages of data?
Deanna, I want you to know that. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it again. I'm looking at the dash cam cameras again this morning. I have looked at each of the documents, and I don't know if you know this, but, you know, the governor actually has a Sandy Hook Advisory Commission to come up with recommendations, and they just announced that this is the worst data dump that the Connecticut State Police has ever presented to a commission.
When did they say that?
Just 4 days ago, and I'd be glad to send you the article, and it's not YouTube, it's actually in the newspaper article, where the mayor of Hampden, I think it's Hamden, that he actually says it's the worst data dump that was ever given to a commission, and they thought that was unconscionable.
I don't understand why he would say that. I thought it was put together very, very well. It's divided up. The books particularly have the original reports of the officers that were there, when they got there, the time that they got there, who was in the building, what they did, exactly what they did within the building. These are original reports. So as far as it being a data dump, I don't see where anybody could say that.
Are you ready? It's a near word. This is actually in the Hartford Courant.
Well, I'm sure that I'm not discounting what you're saying. I just don't agree that it's a data dump.
Well, you know what? Dr. Schwartz, who's the head psychiatrist at the Hartford Hospital, he said that he's never seen something that's not has an index where a commission.
It does have an index. It has an index.
He says, why would I want to watch the video cameras of a police car when there's nothing in it? And then when all of a sudden.
It has time stamps and everything else. It's very important. I think all of that stuff is very important. Wolf, we do have to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig, and we were talking about the data. Now, Dave Gahary interviewed you, and you pointed out a long list of problems that you have with the official Sandy Hook story. And one of the things that you said was that when the police arrived on the scene, they parked 1/4 of a mile from the front door of the school. And you said the same thing on the InfoWars interview. And yet, overhead helicopter footage, which you just referred to, reports and shows that the first responders parked right in front of the lobby doors, while others parked 100 to 150 yards from the school, right from the school door. So you mentioned the dash cam, and a registered nurse, William Blumenthal's dash cam, shows that the cars parked that were parked the furthest away were only 300 to 400 yards away. So, in as much as you did study the helicopter overshots, I'm surprised that you would make that kind of a statement.
Well, you know, my statement doesn't come from the helicopter shots. My statement comes, as you said, did I read the report? It comes from actually their own words, because the first...
But the helicopter shows the first responders. It shows where they parked. It shows that some of them were right next to the lobby doors.
Absolutely.
When you are saying that they parked 1/4 of a mile away from the front door, that just isn't true, according to the reports, one of which I have on the website that people can download. And you mentioned that the helicopter footage, and that footage shows exactly where they parked. So you're right.
The helicopter shows where they parked. Deanna, tell your listeners, when did the helicopters get there? Did they watch them arrive? Did they actually see live footage of when they arrived?
But the official reports that the people filled out, including the one that I have linked on my website today, and if you read the reports, you would know where people park because they said in their reports where they park. And one of those reports is 11399, which states exactly where the individual parked. So they were right up next to the front door. The people who parked the furthest away were like 300 yards.
Did they tell you they parked on Cressy Road when they arrived?
They had four entries. They did send one unit around to Crestview because they did not know what they were dealing with. They didn't know if they had one or more shooters, and so they did have four units. And if you understand the policies, and you mentioned that policies have changed since you were in law enforcement, but the U.S. Department of Homeland Security published the active shooter, how to respond. I have that linked on my website, and it tells exactly how the law enforcement is supposed to respond when they arrive at an active shooter scene, which is what you have also called it. Now, they have changed those policies. They changed them in December of 2013 because of Sandy Hook. But one of the first things that they do is that they usually arrive in teams of four, which they did, and that officers may wear regular patrol uniforms or external bulletproof vests, which they did not have bulletproof vests on. Officers may be armed with rifles, shotguns, or handguns. They can use pepper spray or tear gas to control the situation. And they can also shout commands and may even push individuals to the ground for their own safety. And so they did do exactly what the Department of Homeland Security indicated that they should do. And this was published in, I believe, 2008. And so they followed these policies. Go ahead.
Can I respond? Well, Deanna, you know what I didn't tell David Garrity on his show on February the 11th? You know, you always withhold something, but I'd be glad to fax this to you after we hang up from this conversation. I actually have the certificate in 2006 that I took all of the class. I actually am an instructor for FEMA on incident command. I mean, I have the certificates. I got FEMA certificate. I'm an instructor, and you're telling me that I don't. I teach people this class, and you're telling me I don't know.
You said they didn't follow policies. I'm just asking you. I'm just telling you what the policies are according to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security.
I'm an instructor. Hello, Deanna.
You said that. Where do you instruct those classes?
I instruct them across the country when I do safe school workshops. I train 3,500 school police officers to the Justice Department.
Where?
Do you not read my resume?
Where?
I train them in every major city in the country. I'll be glad to.
Okay, but then why would you make a statement saying that they did not follow Homeland Security, FEMA policies? You made that statement. You talked about an active shooter event from helicopters.
They didn't let the paramedics.
That is not true. That is absolutely not true.
Gosh.
That is not true.
They didn't request helicopters?
We'll get to that. No, they did not request a helicopter.
Why?
I will tell you why.
Why?
Now, one of the other questions, let's go through these questions one at a time.
Sure, go ahead.
One of the other questions that you had is, why didn't they rush to an emergency if it really occurred? And even in the summary, just the 48-page summary, it says that they had boots on the ground in 3 minutes and 11 seconds. Okay, now that is pretty quick in my imagination, you know, as far as I am concerned. They got the first call at 9:35:39, and they immediately went into action. With the receipt of that call, the dispatching, and the arrival of the police, the law enforcement response to the shootings began. So, for you to say, why did...
I mean, how did they enter the school, Deanna?
So, for you to say, why didn't they rush to an emergency if it really occurred, is not correct.
I don't believe I ever said anywhere in a publication that they did not rush to an emergency. I like this.
That's what you said. I wrote down the things that you said.
I like to see that in writing, not what I said. You're just taking things out of context.
Because I wrote down what you said.
You must have recorded it. Everything. Did you record it?
Well, you record it all over the internet, Wolf.
Can I say
what I mean? People can see what you've said.
They didn't request the helicopters.
Okay, we're going to get to that. We will do that when we come back from the top of the hour break. We will talk about the helicopter. And you know that they don't have a helicopter at the local hospitals that they took them to. Danbury does not have a helicopter. They do not have LifeStar helicopter. And that is only used when it is requested. No trauma helicopters were ordered. And you said this is unheard of for an actual emergency. However, it is up to the people on the ground.
I'm glad we're going to talk about that.
Okay, well, yes. It is up to the people on the ground,
the people in charge of the incident, who was that?
Ordered the helicopter.
Who was that?
Well, you tell me.
Well, no, you're the one that has all the answers. Why don't you tell me who was in charge?
Wolf, I don't claim to have all the answers. I just
well,
have a lot of
sound
questions.
Like I don't know what I'm talking about.
I have a lot of questions because I have read the reports, and you have made some false statements. I'm sorry, but you have. All right, we're going to our top of the hour break. We will be back 6 minutes after the hour. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig. His website is childrenssafetyinstitute.com. And we were talking about the helicopters, the fact that they did not use a helicopter to transport any children. And the first call, as I mentioned, came at 9:35.39 a.m. That was when it was when the people were called. There were boots on the ground at 3 minutes and 11 seconds later. And the people who arrived there included Officer Penna, Chapman, Bahama Monde, Vangeli, McGowan, Colgren, Seabrook, and the final volley of shots came from the school, ended at 9:40.03. At 9:42.40, they identified the registered owner of the vehicle. At 9:44.47, Officer Penna, Sergeant Bahamonde, and Lieutenant Vangeli were the first to enter the school. There were parents who outside who took refuge behind the dumpster. Detective Frank, who lives near the school, heard the shots from his home and responded on foot. McGowan took one parent into custody at 9:39 near the fence line at Crestwood Drive because they did have four units responding. According to radio transmissions, they reported two shooters running past the gym. They thought that there was more than one shooter. They did not order trauma helicopters because, well, LifeStar is it, they do not have LifeStar at Danbury. The closest one is in Hartford, and it was logistically easier and more logical to transport people in an ambulance. The other fact is that there were not that many people that were injured. They transported those injured people by ambulance to Danbury Hospital. Using an ambulance, which was already there, minimized moving the patient. Calling for a helicopter would take more time. The ambulance was quicker and safer, and an ambulance has a much wider range of medical equipment being available. There were EMTs there. There were paramedics there. The LifeStar helicopters, as I said, were based in Hartford, which is 38 miles away, meaning that it would take a minimum of 15 minutes to arrive and probably more like 20. They add to the noise and to the confusion. And even when a shooter back in 2010, Omar Thornton, went on a rampage at a beer distribution plant in Hartford, the shooting left at least 9 people dead, according to the local reports. The death toll kept changing, and more people died. Although they had LifeStar helicopters standing by, the officials decided that ambulances would be much, much faster. And so the people on the ground who were in charge of this operation made that decision. Okay. That is why they didn't do it. There weren't that many injured people. There were
two adults, and two children were transported to Danbury Hospital who died at Danbury Hospital.
Correct.
They weren't transported till almost an hour after the shooting. What is that about?
Well, I'll tell you what. Have you ever had to have an ambulance come to pick you up to take you to the hospital?
Absolutely. I know how long it's going to take.
It takes a long time because they have to put a needle in your arm. They have to start fluids. They have to correspond. They have to communicate with the hospital to get instructions, and that is what they did. They had no idea when those policemen went into that building. They had no idea what they were going to find. The police officers went into the building. They found a little girl in the hallway. They sent her back into room 8, and not knowing what was in room 8. The reason they sent her back into room 8 is because not knowing what they were doing, because they did not have bulletproof vests on,
Deanna, please don't tell that to your listeners. You telling me a police officer is going to send a little girl into a crime scene with dead bodies, and you're telling me he didn't know what was in room eight?
Wolf, they had not been in room eight. Now, you are denigrating the police officers who responded. You said that the public doesn't understand, but room 8 was a crime scene. They just entered the building. A child and room 8, 9, and 10 are right there, right at the entry. And at 9:44:50, while the police were in the middle of the corridor, they see shells on the ground. They start moving to the other side of the school. Brooke and McGowan entered the school, according to the radio dispatch. At 9:45:04, the officers report two deceased female adults in the corridor. And you said that the officers sent the kindergartner, who was actually a first grader, back into room 8. Officers were aiming weapons down the hall to cover the 8, the officers who were checking the pulses of the two adult females who did not have a pulse. They had two dead females. It was an active shooter scene, and they were expecting a potential ambush by the shooter or shooters. The police were not wearing bulletproof vests. They sent the little girl back out of the possible line of fire before they had even entered room 8 or room 10. They did not know that room 8 was a crime scene and that the little girl was the sole survivor. This highly dangerous scene of death is in the context in which you're trying to demonize the officer, and they were only trying to act for the safety of the little girl and the fellow officers. And that is part of the school shooter, the policies that I mentioned. It says, officers may shout commands and may push individuals to the ground for their safety. They didn't push the little girl to the ground for her safety. They sent her out of the line of fire. They had no idea what they were going to find. They had no idea whether they were going to be ambushed. They thought that they were doing the best thing, and that is what they did. And of course they didn't. If they had known what was in room 8, of course they wouldn't have sent her back into that room. Nobody in their right mind would do that. And for you to claim that they somehow knew and they sent her back in is absolutely egregious. Absolutely egregious for you to make that statement and demonize those officers. Shame on you. You've been an officer. You wouldn't do that.
You're right. I would not put a little girl into a room with dead bodies. My God.
They did it, Wolf. They did not know there were dead bodies in that room.
Before you put, but listen to this, Deanna. You don't just open the door
and
put a girl in there. There might be a shooter in there. You check it out.
Wolf.
Yeah.
There were two officers who were checking the pulse of the two dead women. Okay? They did not know that there were shooters in the hall. They wanted to get this little girl out of the line of fire because they were covering the two officers that they had sent down the hall. Okay? They would never, officers would never do that. I'm sorry, but they would not have done that.
Well, they should have done that. They put a little girl in room 8 where people are.
We are going to a break. And we will be back, but they would never send a child into a room. They sent her out of the possible line of fire. They had not even entered room 8 or 10. They got there. They found two dead females. They were checking the pulse. They sent two other officers down the hall, and they were covering them. All right. We'll be back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig, and his website is, let me just scroll up here and pick up that website. It is childrenssafetyinstitute.com. All righty, so you believe that there were dead children in that room and that it was egregious to send them in there. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you believe that there were out in room 8, I believe that there were 14 dead children, and you believe that there were 14 dead children in there?
Based on what they say, not what we have found to be true.
So if there weren't dead children in there, what difference does it make if they sent her back in room 8?
Well, you know, Deanna, you should answer that question. That's actually a great one for you.
Well,
because
I do
believe everything they said, so I'm going to believe.
No, I do not believe everything that they said.
No, you just said that I'm demeaning.
I do believe that there were dead children in that room, but I do not believe that they knew that was a crime scene. They had no idea. They had just entered the building.
Deanna, if you give me a chance, every police officer who's listening on your show today, I can tell you this, a police officer not knowing if there's more than one shooter, because that's what the message was, there's multiple shooters, you look into the room first before you ever let any child go in there. You're saying
he just
put her in there.
We don't do that.
That's not our procedure.
Well, wait a minute. Have you ever been a homicide officer? Have you ever investigated? Have you ever attended? Have you ever been a law enforcement officer at a mass shooting? I am just going by
autopsies in Miami. I have seen death. I don't think there was a day when I was a state trooper I didn't see death. Do you know what it's like to go to somebody's house at 3-4 in the morning and tell someone that their loved one has died? I have to take them to the morgue so they can identify the body. Deanna, okay. I know death. I know pain.
Okay.
I know.
I understand that. But we're talking about this specific instant. And what I'm saying is that they had no idea what was in room 8. She had just come out of room 8. She would have been in the line of fire. They had no idea. Look, I'm just telling you what's in the report, okay?
It's called a data dump by the chairman of the Sandy Hook Advisory Commission.
Well, that's what one person called it.
It's four or five commission members. And they're offended for the fact that they're given their...
Are you trying to discredit the entire report of all the hundreds of pages and all of the officers? You are saying that all of them lied about what they did and what they saw and how they handled it?
Yeah,
are you saying that they all lied?
I can tell you after reading the report is there's one thing that makes...
You have read the entire report?
I tell you what, as a nationalist consultant, you have to read it. You have to read all the attachment. You have to look at all the forensic evidence. You have to look
and
at
so you've read, you have read all of the books? All of books?
No, I've read everything that was posted online. I don't know did you get books? I just read what they gave me online.
Okay, what did you read?
Well, the day the incident starts out, you know, 911 call, and you go through all of the attachment, all the evidence.
I only
focus at Sandy Hook. I could care less what happened at the house. It has nothing to Sandy Hook.
Did you go to the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting reports? Did you download all of those reports? Did you look at the 740 PDF files that compose 9 books. Those are PDF files. 740 of them, many of which have 100 pages.
There are special files just for Sandy Hook. Oh, I could not be on your talk show and talking about it. You have to look at the data. It's not what you and me think. It's what they say.
I know. That is what I'm asking you. If you have looked at the data.
I read the report. Now, are you ready? I read the report.
How many page? Which report did you read? The 48-page report?
I only looked at any information that only dealt with the Sandy Hook.
Okay, all of the reports that I'm talking about deal with the Sandy Hook shooting.
Well,
all of them.
But I don't care what happened at the mother's house. I don't care what happened.
I didn't bring up the mother's house. I have not said one thing about the mother's house. That is in a separate report. Okay? That is in a totally separate report.
The final report is the final report that was released to all of us Americans.
That's okay, was that the 48-page report that you're talking about?
No, it's all of it. It's the final report, not a 42-page report.
Okay.
I hope you're not depending on that report.
That was just the summary that which I referred to in the opening of my program.
The 6,700-page report, videos, attachments, forensic evidence.
And you looked at all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's my job as an expert witness. What do you think we do when we get hired? You look.
Who has hired you to be an expert witness for Sandy Hook?
No, I've been hired as an expert. I know what we do when we're hired as an expert. You look at information. You read reports. And for me, in order to say what I'm saying, you would have to read the information.
Okay, so you read all of the reports in book 6.
What would you like to know?
I'm asking you if you read all of the reports.
That registered nurse in the school who says he wore boots when he wears tennis shoes. Okay,
wait. Did you read all of the reports in book 6?
I don't know what book 6 is.
If you had read the reports, you would know what book 6 is.
I don't even look at the number of the book. I look at each section. And I'll answer you. Tell me what you're talking about. Ask questions. I'll respond.
I asked you a question. If you were familiar with book 6.
I don't categorize it in books. The report
comes out, if you look at the website, that's cspsandyhookreport.ct.gov. At the top, it says CFS 12007045559. It is a total of... It's 720 megabytes, includes 9 books for a total of 740 PDF files. Those books have all of the original reports that all of the officers filed. They are signed by the officers. The officers tell you exactly what they did, when they did it, at the time that they did it. If you had read the report, you would know exactly what I'm talking about when I refer to the 9 books.
Now, if you read it, then you'd see, well, let me look at it. What you should see, the first officer who filed his report on the day of the incident, he actually got the wrong day. Did you know that? He said that it was 12/13. He didn't even have the right date in the report.
What was his name?
I'm going to look for you right now. I got it on my computer for you.
Okay, you look for it.
I'll be glad to do that to help you because I do not want to mislead anybody.
Oh, heaven forbid that we ever want to do that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
All righty. You mentioned that this was a drill and not an actual...
I never said it was a T. Never used the word drill, ever.
Okay. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig. His website is ChildrenSafetyInstitute.com. And many of the pictures are in Book 6. Book 6 shows the pictures of Sherlock and Hochsprung, who were deceased, and Officer Bell placed the easel there because children from Classroom 12 were screaming when they were leaving their classroom, and that is in Report 11399, which is in Book 6. And all of the pictures that show exactly where the bodies are. And it was Lieutenant Vengali who asked the little girl to get back into the classroom to get out of the line of fire. And this is also in Book 6, Report 2060. And most of these things that I'm talking about are in Book 6. There's the diagram of the classroom, exactly where they found the bodies, exactly where it shows that the officers were aiming down the hallway to cover the officers who were checking the pulse of the two deceased females. The girl steps out into the line of fire, and Vangeli says, get back into the classroom, which she did. They immediately thereafter, according to Book 6, set up staging. There was an ambulance crew headed by paramedic Robert Velateri, and soon he was treating the six-year-old girl who was dying. The officer that carried her out had blood all over and flesh was covering him, and this officer then decided he did not go back into the school, but instead went to check the vehicle. And this is Officer Pena, and he is the one that went into room 8 at 9:55.28. He went into room 8, rescued the girl who was covered in blood. He takes her out to the lobby where Officer McGeever takes her. And at 9:57:40, and takes her out of the building. Officer Pena never re-enters the building, but instead goes to check the car, and that is when he finds a shotgun in Adam Lanza's back seat. The girl in room, there was another girl that was in room 10 that was shot in the neck. Multiple people saw the officers carrying this bleeding girl to the ambulance. Some of the kids had been shot in the head. Those little first graders were shot to pieces. New York Police Detective, Newtown Officer Scott Smith and Officer William Chapman carried the girl to the ambulance. And this is all in Book 6. Anybody who has read any of the reports would know about Book 6. They would know about Book 2. They would know about the 9 books that are part of the report. It is the greatest part of the report. And I don't know.
I'm looking at them. There are 9 books. I agree with you, but there's no actual photograph of showing the principal dead. It's a diagram, not the actual photo.
No, there's a photo. There is
showing
a photo.
Her picture where she's dead on the floor.
She's laying on the ground. You can see the easel.
Okay.
You have to look at all of the photos there. They went in with video cameras. They took so many pictures of the interior of the school. I mean, it's just amazing when you look
Deanna, do you have a copy of the video where Lieutenant Vangeli of the Newtown Police Department does a presentation in front of 200 police officers, where he tells them that he was the incident commander that morning, where he loaded one of the children into his police vehicle?
I have downloaded all of
the firehouse. I mean, you got to be. Is that you? Don't you drive a child to the firehouse?
Wait! There was 2 ambulances right there in front of the school. The staging area for this event was at the firehouse. That is where they staged.
Deanna, he drove them. That's his word, not mine. He drove the girl in his car to the firehouse.
Well, there were 2 ambulances right out in front. I mean, the pictures show it.
Are we in trouble? Oh my! No wonder we're not going to solve this problem. We got so many people who believe a police report. Deanna, you have got to open up your eyes, please. Oh, my God. Goodness gracious.
Well, you have made so many false statements all over the Internet. You said that no parents viewed the bodies of their children and that this was unheard of. And this is obviously incorrect, as Noah Posner had an open casket funeral.
The morgue. Who got to see their children at the morgue?
His lower jaw was shot off.
Your what? Who got to see their children at the medical examiner or at the morgue? That when they found out their child was dead. Who?
Okay, wait. At the morgue. You're talking about the temporary morgue that they set up right out, right on the premises.
No. The one at the medical examiner's office, once the bodies were transported, who got to see their child? The medical examiner said no one got to see their child.
That was initial.
And we took pictures.
That was at the school. That was at the school, and he made the statement that you cannot have all these people, 40 people, going into the building. It would have created chaos. And you yourself have said that nobody, absolutely nobody, can go into a crime scene. That no crime scene is to be compromised in any way, and to allow 40 parents to go in and see their child, to identify their child, before the police had an opportunity to investigate the crime scene, would have created chaos and devastation for these parents. I personally would not like to see that happen.
The medical examiner would not take pictures and show those pictures to the parents outside the school. That is the most unprofessional means of ever identifying a body. You do it at the medical examiner's office, the morgue, and the carver even said none of the parents got to see their children at the morgue.
He didn't say at the morgue.
Well, medical examiner's office. They didn't get to see their child.
They did not.
That's his words,
not
mine.
They did not go into the school.
Absolutely, it's a crime scene.
Well, that's what I just said.
But why would he show them pictures outside the school of their dead children? That's unprofessional.
Because you wouldn't want to take all of these people into the school to identify their children.
What you do is you unite the bodies of your loved ones in the morgue.
Wolf, yeah. you have.
Oh my God.
Families, don't treat me like that. Don't ridicule me. I'm not going to put up with that. Now, you have a bunch of parents standing in front of the school. There's been a shooting. Nobody knows who has been shot. The parents are wondering if it's their child. They took photos of the children. Otherwise, you would have a compromised crime scene if you allowed all of these people to rush into the school to see where their child was.
Okay, so they took a picture.
And you have indicated before that there was nothing that could keep you out of the school.
Right.
That if you were a parent, that you would have demanded to go into that school.
I said into the morgue. They would not.
No, I don't think so. I've listened to all of
your
recording.
Listen to your show. You're taking my words and taking them wherever you want.
No, I'm not. That's what you've done with the report.
Okay, let me ask you this. Did they show pictures to the parents outside the school?
I believe that is what they did.
Did they show them? Just the face shot, a facial shot of the children?
Now, you know that I do not know that.
Are you ready for this? But that's what, well, what kind of picture would you show them? Would you show them with all the bullet holes in their body or just a picture of their face?
So you do absolutely believe that 20 children were murdered?
Not until they answer my 16 questions. I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
I'm waiting for 10 months just for 16 simple questions.
Well, all you have to do is read the report.
Well, let me tell you what. I don't trust that report because it's a data dump. It's set by the commission.
Well, you just said that you had read the report and you were using it to verify what you were telling me. So either you do read the report and deem it credible. Or you don't use it as a source, which you did use as a source.
Okay,
we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Wolfgang W. Halbig. His website is childrenssafetyinstitute.com. And you said that you were an instructor for FEMA, and that we're not to believe the reports because they are a data dump, and yet you work for FEMA and the U.S. government, apparently the Department of Homeland Security. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I have a certificate. I have my training materials and my certificate. Be glad to fax it to you for validation.
But yet you're saying that we should not trust it.
Actually, I faxed it to American Free Press just to make sure y'all had it. He'll be glad to show it to you. Please take a look at it.
Well, that's fine. But what I'm asking you is, you work for the Department of Homeland Security.
No, I don't. I don't work for FEMA. I only train people through the FEMA guidelines. When I'm hired by a school district and they want to know about school,
what's the last school district that hired you?
Well, I just did a workshop for 200 school board members in Tampa, and we talked about the FEMA active shooter response.
What school district?
It's called the Florida School Board Association.
Okay.
That's Wayne Blanton. He's the executive director. I did New York School Board Association, Illinois, Oklahoma. I mean, you just do your homework.
I have.
Good.
All righty. John Reed was one of the licensed paramedics that was in the building. That's in Book 6. Paramedic Bernie Meehan, also licensed, was in Book 6. The director for the Danbury Hospital, he is an EMS director. He's paramedic Matthew Casavecchia, and they refer to him in Book 6. And they did 4 different assessments on each victim, all of whom had multiple gunshot wounds and wounds incompatible with life, making legal presumptions of death, which they were allowed to do. Otherwise, they wouldn't have a triage category of death, black. And they did this before the scene was declared safe and before...
Don't let these people in there before the scene is safe? You let the paramedics in the building and the police...
Wait a minute.
You just said that. It's not safe. Why would you do that?
Trooper, first class. He's a trooper.
He's a registered nurse. Medic, the paramedic was in there. A doctor was in there. A director of some kind of hospital. And they were and the school's not safe. They don't
because
do that.
Because of their experience.
No, Deanna, you can't have it both ways. You cannot have it both ways.
Okay, there were 5 paramedics, 4 EMTs, and 1 registered nurse in contact with the deceased children in the first minutes, including going into the school.
This does not include
the several other troopers who are EMTs. These are EMTs who are troopers. They are police officers and EMTs. Pardon me?
Did they have their stethoscopes with them? Or did they just check pulse?
They did 4 different evaluations, EKGs, on each of the deceased patients. The EKG tapes were kept with the triage tag for each patient. They had permission to do this. Dr. Pat Broderick of the Danbury Hospital.
Where was he at the time of this going on?
I have no idea. I do not know where he was. He is one that gave them the permission, the authority to do this. Pardon me?
A doctor has to visually see it. Only a nurse. Are you ready? Are you going to give me a chance to respond?
Go ahead.
Only a doctor in Connecticut or a registered nurse who is specially certified in declaring bodies legally dead can do that. A paramedic can't do it. An EMT can't do it. So where is the registered nurse that's certified or the doctor who declared them dead?
Registered nurse Blumenthal.
He's a paramedic or EMT.
No, he is a registered nurse. He is Trooper First Class is a registered nurse since 1996. It is in Book 6, Report 11235. He is a registered nurse.
One person, so we have one person that you've now identified, and who's going to declare all 24?
Well, why would you have a death in a triage tag? Why would you have a death that says you can take them straight to the morgue if they could not declare people dead during a triage evaluation? There were EMTs, there were registered nurses.
Now,
had
you said nurses, you're saying more than one?
I gave you the names.
You gave me one name, registered nurse, one name. And that one name is going to declare 24 bodies legally dead in 8 to 11 minutes?
Oh, there's 26, Wolf. 26.
No. You're wrong. Two of them were transferred to Danbury Hospital.
Okay.
Died at the hospital.
You're correct.
Okay. I read the report.
Well, so did I.
Well, we're on the same team. Deanna, all we want is the truth. I'm not trying to give you a hard time or listen, I'm just looking for the truth. I don't even want to be in this fight. I hope and pray to God that I'm wrong.
Okay. What about the officers that came to your home?
If the police would not have come to my house, you and I even wouldn't be talking today.
They came to your house, and isn't that police harassment? Did you report them?
Absolutely not. I'm a former law enforcement officer. What they're saying is they put me on, remember, harassment. Does anybody know the definition of harassment? The first time they come, they gave me a warning. Now, if I would have said to them, don't you ever come back, it would be harassment. But I'm one of them. I understand their job.
And so why do you think they came to see you?
Well, I know why they came to see me. They told me not to ask any more questions or the Connecticut State Police were going to file charges.
What kind of charges? You said they were homicide investigators. Why would they send homicide investigators?
And the show has the names of them, too.
Pardon me?
Repress, Dave Garrity has the names of the two homicide investigators.
His name is Gaheri.
I'm sorry, Gaheri. Long day.
Just began.
Two
homicide investigators threatened that if you did not stop. But all the things that you've asked are in the report. That's what I don't understand. Why would you ask these questions if they were all in the report?
Who was the incident commander that morning?
It was Vangeli.
So he didn't order the trauma helicopters? He didn't let the paramedics in?
You don't order trauma helicopters for dead people. You order trauma helicopters
in 8 to 11 minutes. You put the helicopters in the air. You can always turn them away, but you use every resource.
No, you don't. You do it only when it is called for, depending on the scene. And I already gave you an example of one shooting in Connecticut that was right there in Hartford that did not use trauma helicopters. Ambulances have more medical apparatus in order to help trauma patients than the helicopter does. The helicopter creates a crisis. It creates a lot of noise. There has to be a place for it to land. You keep harping on this, and I have answered you. I have answered you.
At the Sandy Hook School for that helicopter to land.
But they decided that it was best to use the ambulance.
Then why haven't the parents sued the school district for negligence?
Well, because the report just came out. You're not going to go out and get a lawyer on December 15th of 2012 to sue the school.
Well, Congress did.
No, they didn't. No, they did not. I'm sorry, Wolf. They did not. All righty. Thank you so much for being a guest today. Sorry we didn't take those callers. I'll talk with you tomorrow.